Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Hi, it's Mike. Sometimes you hear podcasters say, leave us a review. It helps other people find the show. Does it? I think it might. Why not try it? Please follow us and do recommend the show to others. And if you can, leave a review in your own mind, in your own hearts, or especially on one of those big websites that keeps the reviews and shows them to the rest of the public. Hi, it's Saturday, and welcome to the show, Rook. That's what they say in professional sports when a newcomer or a rookie is first introduced into the ways of action. I bring this up because this is NBA All-Star Weekend, and we bring you two basketball-themed segments every week. On the Saturday show, we bring you one from the vaults and one from the week. And our one from the week is bonus, all bonus coverage of Bob Delaney, who was a lot of things, and he was on the show this week, and he talked a lot about his insight into trauma and informing the people, the frontline responders for COVID. He's also worked with soldiers. But before that, he was a very big time NBA referee, a very important NBA referee, and then an SEC referee. And so I used my time with him to pepper him with some questions specifically about basketball and about refereeing. And I put those here. That's for you. Those are bonus segments. Soon, we will have our own repository for such bonus segments. We won't be putting them in the Saturday show. If this is the sort of thing that you like and adds value, look for that major announcement occurring on Tuesday. Another basketball interview I did, and one of my favorites, with one of my favorite players, was Felipe Lopez. I interviewed him about a documentary, about a 30 for 30 documentary that came out in 2019. Felipe Lopez was a great player for St. John's. This is Saturday. Today, I will be at the St. John's versus Creighton game. It might not seem exciting to you. It certainly is a little less than exciting for my two sons who I'm taking there. But every year we make a pilgrimage. My father went to St. John's. I went to a college with no football team. And a basketball team that definitely played basketball, but not the sort of team you'd go and root for because, you know, Division III. So as far as major college sports, St. John's suffices is the only one that I'm really into. It also gives me a bond with my, I guess, outer borough Italian heritage, let's say. Felipe Lopez was just a wonderful guest and a wonderful guy, and I hope you like that interview too. So here's Felipe, followed by NBA ref Bob Delaney.
Podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Basketball began in Springfield, Illinois. Soon thereafter, New York City took it over. If you look at the list of the top basketball players in high school in the United States from New York City, it's almost the list of the greatest basketball players ever. You have Lou Alcindor, Stephen Marbury, Billy Cunningham. And you know who was the number one player in the country when he was a high school senior? Felipe Lopez. Unlike all these other guys, he is from the Dominican Republic. He went to St. John's, where I, as a young guy in my 20s, rooted my heart out for him. He is now the subject of a 30 for 30 documentary on ESPN called The Dominican Dream.
It's great, and I'll tell you why it's great. Even if you say to yourself, wait, Felipe Lopez, do I remember him from his four seasons averaging about 6 points a game in the NBA? But the person of Felipe Lopez comes through. In fact, the person of Felipe Lopez is right here next to me. Thanks for doing the documentary, and thanks for coming in, Felipe.
Thank you so much for having me out here. It's an honor.
When they approached you, how did they say what the story was that they wanted to tell? Did they want to tell a story of a great high school kid who was a little disappointing? Did they want to tell an immigrant story? How'd they say the story was going to go?
Well, honestly, initially, I really didn't want to do no story.
Right.
I'm like, you know what? After the Sports Illustrated cover, I think I had enough, publicity. But the way that the producer, Jonathan Hack, presented it to me, it was really appealing. He showed me a video of his great-great-grandfather selling newspaper in front of City Hall. And he just started talking about how he was the reason why his family and his family came to the United States. So, you know, that whole immigration process was something that I was able to relate with. And, you know, the story talks about my history playing basketball. But at the end of the day, he also touch on elements that is really important to me as far as like being an immigrant from the Dominican Republic.
So you were on the cover of Sports Illustrated, which the documentary kind of surprising to me, but then, you know, I'm in my 40s. I don't need it, but maybe someone in their 20s does. The documentary points out, oh, this was a really huge deal being on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Yeah, it's the biggest deal in the world. And there you were before you even put up your first shot at St. John's. Did it become sort of a blessing and a curse to be on that cover?
Yeah, definitely. Both. The blessing, because there I am 5 years after I come to this country, barely speaking the language that I'm speaking right now, but portraying a different type of image to the Dominican Republic, to the Dominicans in New York.
Right.
You know, you talk about New Yorkers, we recall, you know, Washington Heights as being one of the area where the most drugs were being sold. So it was pretty groundbreaking and special to me because I grew up around that time. I knew what it was to say that you were Dominican and kind of had to hide a little bit of your identity because you didn't want to be associated with everything that was happening.
And once you sprang onto the scenes, there was no hiding because fans of yours with the Dominican flag would show up at every game, like two or three whole sections of wherever you're playing, Madison Square Garden or the Rose Hill Gymnasium in Fordham, just overrun by Dominican people.
The emergency aisles were packed with people sitting in it. The sidelines were packed. It was just an unbelievable high school atmosphere. And sophomore year, we had to move them to bigger venues.
16, 17 years old, you're selling out Fordham, you're selling out Iona. That's how much a draw he was.
Drums, dancing. I mean, if they could have barbecued a chicken at the stadium, they would have.
Done it. Yeah. I'm pretty sure we probably barbecued it outside anyway.
So it's a whole party.
It was a party. That's a sense of being Latino, being Dominican. We have a sense of just being happy. Our music pretty much expressed it for us. You know, we brought that kind of energy to the scene. But my game was kind of a little bit electrifying at the same way.
So there were the other schools, which is every other school in the country, recruited you, and Bobby Knight showed up, and Kansas, and North Carolina, and these are all great schools, but I'm just kind of wondering how you and your Dominican fan base would do in Bloomington, Indiana.
Exactly.
I don't know if it's quite a right fit.
And, you know, I visited UCLA. I went to Kansas. I went to Florida State. They're just not another place like New York. You know, there's just such a magic about being in New York. And even though, you know, 4 years at St. John's, I felt those were my best years. You know, if you take away basketball,
where you enjoyed yourself,
I really enjoyed it. You know, my 4 years at St. John's, I consider them the best years of my life. You know, the relationship and the friendship that I was able to build. You know, I became a man. You know, those 4 years at St. John's, because a lot of the responsibility that now I carry on, I learned how to deal with those things at St. John's. Plus, the fact that I ended up with a degree.
Yeah,
you know.
It was what they always say that a player, or what they don't say it now so much, but when you were younger, the line was, you know, you go for 4 years, you get your degree, and then you'll be set up for life. And people nod and give it lip service, but you did it. You actually did it. And you were turning down, as the documentary shows, million-dollar contracts along the way to do it, to really get your degree, because it was obvious that it was really important to you
and
your family. It's an
honor to my family. My mother being a teacher for 25 years, my father being a blue-collar worker. It almost felt like within the family, it's really important sometimes to be that one person that breaks a cycle.
Yeah.
You know, my mother never graduated, but she gave me the opportunity to go to school. My father as well. They sacrificed for us. You know, in the documentary they show when I graduated, my whole family's around me, like, and they feel like they graduated as well, because in a sense, they did.
Yeah.
You know, I ended up my career. I tore my ACL, but everything that I have done, it has been based on the fact that I was able to get my degree.
From a strict dollars and cents point of view, it wasn't the right choice, though, was it? I mean, I looked over your salary for 4 years, and you get the minimum for someone who's drafted in the first round. It's around $500,000 a year. And then because of your injury, you can't play anymore. Mm-hmm. If they were offering you $1 million to go overseas, or if you could have been a top five pick after your freshman year or even after high school, would you have made more money playing basketball, do you think?
Let me rephrase a little bit on that.
Yeah.
How many other athletes have made way more than I, but have ended up being bankrupt?
Absolutely.
So, you know, in a sense, it's like we looking at situations on how to be successful.
Not what you make, it's what you keep. Yeah,
it's what you keep.
Yeah.
It's how you handle it, how you live your life. You know, I didn't make all the millions, so I didn't need to buy a big mansion.
Do you think going to college for 4 years helped you?
Yes.
Help you keep your money, the money.
It helped you understand your value and how to, you know, manage yourself a little bit better than just, you know, live your life recklessly.
Do you think if you were the same kind of number one player in the country recruit today, that your college
I'm gone. I'm gone. Don't ask me that question.
Gone after a year.
I'm gone.
Yeah.
I'm gone quick. Because we live in a different time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're living in a time where you're able to know what KG did from high school, what LeBron have done from high school. But, you know, before me, there was no one else.
Right.
So I could have been that one guy.
There was Daryl.
I could have been that Jonathan.
Moses.
You remember
Malone.
Jonathan? That kid that went from high school and ended up like playing like 1 or 2 years.
Right, right.
Jonathan Bender
or Corleone Young. Remember
exactly.
This guy?
Yeah. You know, so I could have been that as
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
You know, okay, you pretty popular. You probably made some good money. But it's about the gain and what you were able to provide yourself. I hated being in the bench. Like my few years in the league, yeah. I was in the bench. I'm working extra hard because I'm not a bench player. Like, don't tell me I'm a bench player. I don't believe you.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what happened. I really didn't have a blueprint as far as like, oh, yeah, I should go to the league from high school because such and such did it. And now it's so easy for any guys to have a little bit of talent and be like,
yeah,
they're gone.
I also think, just from an NBA perspective, so let's say you are a guy who's not seen as a starter. A way to work your way into a lineup is have a niche. Be a shooter, be a stopper on defense. But you weren't that. You were a guy who always had the ball, dominated the ball, made things happen with the ball.
Yeah.
Maybe these days they'd teach you, you'd work on your three-point shooting, or they'd teach you some other aspect of the game and find a way to use your unique athletic talents.
Well, I agree with you. Because, you know, being a player that dominated so much, you go into the league now, and I'm the 24th pick. And my contract is barely less than $1 million.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm playing with KG. KG's making 25 mil. Chauncey Billups is making, I don't know, 10. Wally Serbia is making 12. And then there's me, less than $1 million. The option, I'm the number 4th option. So
yeah,
don't think that I'm going to be taking all the shots that I want to, because I don't have the green or neon light that some of these other players have. What really helped me a lot to just play aggressively all the time was the fact that I was a little bit ignorant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have no clue who I'm playing.
Right.
You could be like Iverson or whoever. You know,
yeah,
my mind is not thinking about who you are. It's like what you're capable of doing.
Yeah.
Because I want to make sure that I put the best effort into this game.
Yeah.
And that was the only thing that I knew how to do, and helped me to really just focus on every single day, making sure I was the best player on the basketball court.
Did you trash talk when you played?
Nah. I would hype my own self up. You know, I would just, you know, just do like a Dominican, you know, merengue or bachata or something. Uh-huh. But it was not like to taunt the other person, just to keep myself hype.
Do you think that you came a little early? Because we saw Victor Cruz as a giant. He did the merengue and he became this huge thing. He did the salsa. Yeah. Maybe people didn't know what you were doing. I mean, now we're embracing Latin culture a little more.
Yeah, but again, I had a band. Yeah. I had people with the guira, with the congos and everything. So I'm listening to the music while I'm playing. So, you know, once in a while, the music would hit me. I would like have to do a couple of moves.
Are your friends or your teammates from St. John's, they're in the documentary, Zenden Hamilton, yeah, the great center, Tariq Turner, who I think still broadcast the games. Are you still close with those guys?
Yeah, that's the reason why I say that, you know, St. John's provided me with the best years, because those are really my brothers. You know, those are my family. We have stayed close throughout the years. Everyone have gone to do their own career, but, you know, at least we always found time to make sure that we embrace each other, we get together, go out. We give each other, you know, advice on whatever things that could be, but we understand why we're doing it, you know, because we all went through the same struggle. And even though, you know, the documentary is about, you know, Felipe Lopez and everything else, they all embrace and they all, like, you know what I'm saying? They felt the pain and they all, like, kind of just wanted the best, not just for myself, but for all of us.
Yeah. They wanted to provide testimony for you and who you are. They wanted to be part of this. I got the sense that they wanted to be part of the documentary. So the Felipe Lopez story is remembered as not this great high school phenom who maybe was a little disappointing in the pros, but the Felipe Lopez story is a guy who used basketball to get a lot of happiness out of life.
Let me just say something. I know you say that, you know, a little disappointing in the pro. I'm very proud of what I was able to do in the pros There was no other Latino doing it the way I was doing it. You know, when I went to arena, even though I wasn't playing, I would see people from Mexico, Venezuela, Panama, with the Dominican flag. So it obviously it meant something for a lot of these people that did not have a voice. So maybe sometimes the participation in the court might have been important for people that have pulled that tag that I should be in the next Michael Jordan. But to that Latino family that went to see the game, just the fact that they saw someone that it looks like them, it spoke the same language, to them that was a success.
Yeah.
You know, so like the story that the documentary is bringing out is that success could be carried in a whole different way.
Tell me about the club team that you fund the Dominican, and where do you live most of the time?
So I'm here. I'm in New York. I'm in the Bronx.
Do you live near Felipe Lopez Way?
We couldn't find the sign.
I know, but...
We couldn't find the sign,
honestly.
What is it,
152nd?
150 in Grand Concourse. But I lived in 151st during my high school. I moved out from there. But I'm in the Bronx, and I split my time a little bit to the Dominican Republic because I just found the time to be the president of my club. I'm running a program that holds over 300 kids. So I'm giving back what I was giving. Man, honestly, I'm blessed. And the reason why, you know, I'm so involved into the community is because I remember being a young kid and not having nothing. You know, and it's the opportunity for the kids to just be able to be dreamers. You know, I'm so happy that, you know, I was able to make that contribution to my community.
Yeah. What NBA team do you root for?
Right now? Man, I'm just hoping that the New York Knicks, we get it together, man.
It's tough.
We have had some really tough years lately, man. I don't know what to tell you. But, you know, Golden State is really a team that really impressed me because of how unselfish they play.
Yeah.
You know, even when they incorporated KD into the squad, you can tell that KD needed to learn how to play with those guys because they just so unselfish.
If you played for them, can you imagine the lanes they would open for you, wide open spaces?
I'm telling you. I, on that team, I would not need to take a jumper at all. Just drive and kick out in case I needed to kick out.
All right. Number 13 from Rice High School in St. John's, Red Storm during his time there. Felipe Lopez, the Dominican Dream, is on ESPN now. Felipe, great to meet you.
Thank you so much for having me.
podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Is this Michael Jordan carefrontating you?
Michael is carefrontating.
And is this Rick Mahorn and Patrick Ewing carefrontating each other?
Rick and Patrick got into a fight. It was a Nets game. Ricky was playing for the Nets, and Patrick. That took place in the first half.
Yeah.
And then I learned later that they were in the back having a sandwich and watching the rest of the game together.
Doesn't surprise me. Okay, let's just do a couple rapid round questions about things that occurred to me as I read your life story. Were the Bad Boy Pistons badder than any other teams that you confronted?
If you could referee the Bad Boy Detroit Pistons, you could referee anywhere. They made me a better referee.
Yeah? Really?
Yeah, there was a challenge every night. It was a challenge to be able to go up and down the floor with them. They tested it and pushed the boundaries on everything.
Was the malice in the palace, two-part question, was there any refereeing culpability, and that did that change refereeing afterwards?
I think that I don't know that it's referee culpability. If I could take a minute and just explain, that was a time frame when it was the game was over, right? It was like
pretty
a 20-point game
seconds,
at the time.
Yeah.
And it was a time when season ticket holders would leave, and then people that were sitting up in the less expensive seats would come down, and that's not allowed anymore. And so you had a different crowd around courtside than you would normally have.
What do you think about, when you watch an NBA game, unlike college, there's a lot of discussion going on between referee and player. And mostly that's good. You know, the players deserve the respect of an explanation, and maybe they'll understand it. Two-part question. That is not allowed in the college game. They'll tee you up for looking at you sideways. Should college change a little bit?
I think that sports are a microcosm of society. And, since social media and Twitter and everybody thinks they have an opinion and it matters. And so I think that's expanded, and it shows up with athletes. And so there's more conversation taking place than in the era that I was more of my heyday. I started in 87 and went to 2011 on the floor. And then I went into the office from 12 to 17 as the director of officials. But I agree with you. I think that there's more and more conversation being had, and at times it's okay, but at other times it's just complaining and just go about playing the game.
Right. You don't get owed an explanation. Like, you should know if your hand hit the other guy's wrist. Do you think that leads to more whining? Just the notion that, okay, I owe you an explanation for everything, and we're going to have a big conversation. So therefore every call is a thing of dispute.
Yeah, I think it just it breeds more complaining. And so but you also can't turn around and hit everybody with a technical every time that somebody says something to you. So there's a balance that has to take place. I believe in proper authority behavior. We have to figure out how to be able to adjudicate. And I say you become a really good professional referee when you understand how to navigate the will to win. The will to win is coming at you. Every call you make is interpreted as getting away in the way of their win.
Right. These guys, they have such passion, legitimate passion. You have to acknowledge that.
Yes.
Got it. Do makeup calls exist even on a subconscious level?
I don't think so. I think we're trained well enough at the professional level to understand and compartmentalize and push away. Once you make a bad call, it's a bad call. But if you make up calls, you're going to go up and down the floor. You're going to be making up calls all night long. And the old adage, two wrongs don't make a right.
Yeah.
And so you just have to let it go and continue to try and be as good as you can be. I don't believe that it ever entered into my mind of a makeup call.
Can a good ref be quote unquote worked, which is when they always say coaches are working the refs, you know, trying to get the call for the next time. Does that work?
I don't think so either. I think that there's a discipline within us to know. Maybe early on, it could happen subconsciously.
Like a young referee, you mean?
Yeah, early on in your referee career.
Right.
Because now you're in environments where you've been watching this on TV. I mean, you know, the first time I met Julius Erving, I'm like looking at him like, this is Dr. J. And yet I realized I have to go to work. I had Kobe's game, 61 points in Madison Square Garden. I didn't know he had that many points
right.
until after the game.
Right.
Because you're so focused on each play and getting up and down the floor. It wasn't until Spike started yelling, it's a Roger Maris game, that I even understand what was going on.
Spike and you have had, not confrontations, but he's giving you crap, right?
Yeah, I had a horrible call against the Knicks back in the day. They were playing Miami. I wiped out a basket on Allen Houston before we had replay, and it should have been good. And it changed the playoff settings, and the Knicks ended up on the road in the playoffs in the first round at Indiana. And as I walked out on the floor, Spike was there in Indiana, is yelling at me, we should be in the Garden because of you. We're over here. I say, Spike, I've seen every one of your movies, and they ain't all hits either, brother.
Yeah. I remember that game against the Heat. Terry Cummings puts up a leaner. Everyone's batting it around. And you're right, though you weren't right in the moment.
No, Allen, I wasn't right in the moment.
Allen Houston gets it wrong. Did your co-referees see it differently? Or once you blow the whistle and wave it off, that's it?
No, we had a discussion, and it came down to Hugh Evans, the late Hugh Evans, Hall of Famer Hugh Evans was the crew chief, and he agreed with me that it was late, and Leroy Richardson was the other referee, and he thought it was good, and it was like a 2-1 vote, and Leroy was right.
Yeah, but the mechanics of that are you're listening for the horn or watching the 24 clock light up to see that the ball leaves his hands in time.
Yeah, back in the day, it was watching for the light because the horn sound travels, you know, from up above,
yeah,
and it's going to be more time. So the light was what you were going by, and
yeah, lightning comes quicker than thunder. Yeah.
Yes.
So the other thing though is now that would be reviewed. I think it might be humanly impossible to see differences of 0.2 seconds when you're trying to triangulate between two visual sources, the hand and the light. I mean, literally, you were asked to do an impossible thing. So even though you had a great comeback to Spike Lee in the moment, how much beating yourself up over that one did you do, a thing that was really not within your control?
It was horrible. I mean, I remember it was 2 days of just, you know, at one point I had to stop watching TV or wow. reading newspapers, right? Because you're beating yourself up and it's reinforcing it. And as I said earlier, you just can't wait to get back on the court and get at it again. But pushing through those kinds of things, I think, adds to the resilience levels, adds to the growth and development of an individual, because you're more cognizant and more aware of what potentially could take place. And so you have a higher level of focus levels or concentration levels, whatever we want to call it, to make sure that doesn't happen again. You can make one mistake. I always say the word fail, first attempt in learning, F-A-I-L. It's not a failure until you are.
I just wanted to ask you about the undercover work. I made a comment about you had to worry about a bill of lading. Now, unlike a real business owner, you had people back, I assume you had people back in with the FBI and the New Jersey office who were taking care of most of that stuff. But some of your day must have actually been spent on what a real trucking company owner would worry about, right?
Absolutely. I mean, at some points, I was more concerned about the trucks than it was about making cases, because it actually becomes like competitive about the trucking business, right? I mean, we were the house trucker for Frigid Freight Company, which was a Genovese controlled company that hauled frozen delicacies like lobster and shrimp. And so we had to have refrigerated loads. And so all of these kinds of things were going on all the time. Mike, even when Like, I never thought I'd get to the NBA. That wasn't a goal. I always thought I'd be a state trooper for life. After I surfaced from the undercover job, within 3 weeks, 4 weeks, I got a call from a trucking company in Jacksonville, Florida, offering me a position as vice president of a real trucking company. The guy said to me, if you could run a trucking company under those situations, you could run my trucking company easy.
That is true. That is an excellent point. And last, I'll be honest, I had known you from the NBA. I didn't know you have the sidelines. And when I got pitched on the idea, just the totality of your experience was captivating. But without the NBA as part of your resume, if you had, whatever, work for a trucking company or be a consultant, do you think that you'd have either the fame or acclaim or have been the opportunity to do what you've been doing for the last 10 and 15 years, just really focusing on mental health and PTSD?
No, I really believe that when I look back at my life, that while that undercover job was about putting away bad guys, and we did, that it was really about me going through that to be in a position to help a lot of good people. And then moving into the NBA gave me the opportunity to have a platform, as they call it today. I don't know, you know, the kids all call about the platform and their legacies. Legacy, I'm not worried about. The platform and the door opening, those three letters next to my name, NBA, open a lot of doors and put me in a position to help a lot of good people today. I spent time with our special forces this past week, and I was with Green Beret team talking about this very subject that you and I have shared. And this week coming up, I'll be doing grand rounds for hospitals and speaking to our healthcare community.
So you talk a lot, you write a lot about the trauma of a job. You mentioned, you know, a policeman who might be, or a police officer who might be investigating some horrific scene and they experience trauma. This is a time when the police, to a large extent, because of the misdeeds of some, to some extent, just because we stereotype, it's very traumatic and stressful time for police officers. And it does seem like many of us do not care, or if the message is, you know, police recruitment is down, so be it. We don't extend the same sort of sympathy, even, which isn't, I know, the most exalted emotion, right? Empathy is better, but we don't exalt that. We don't extend that same sort of sympathy towards what police are going through as we do the heroes in the military, the heroes on the front line. Okay. Isn't that dangerous? Doesn't that create more of an opportunity for further misdeeds? Do you worry about that?
Yeah, my concern is that this is becoming, it almost reminds me like the Vietnam era with our soldiers, that they were vilified or disrespected. And I think that that's taking place within the law enforcement community now. And the hope is that we create an understanding that teachers, nurses, police officers, firefighters, military are noble professions, and we want the best of our best to be in those positions. I'm not so sure that we're getting that right now. We're getting bullies with a badge. We're getting people that are not as interested in going into those professions, and we have to find ways to create a better environment for recruiting the best of our society into those positions. We do have tremendous men and women serving us in law enforcement, but they're getting painted with the same brush because of those that are taking actions that are not anywhere near honorable.
Bob Delaney is a former NBA referee, a former New Jersey state trooper, and his latest book is titled Heroes Are Human: Lessons in Resilience, Courage, and Wisdom from the COVID Front Lines. Thank you so much.
Pleasure to be with you, Mike.
And that's it for the Saturday show. One more note. When I worked for NPR, they used to always say, well, you have to do a spot, you know, a new spot on the All-Star Game. And I say, sure, you know, it's not unimportant. But you realize that of the thousands of professional basketball games played each year, this is the one that doesn't count. Just in terms of pure news value, the Detroit Pistons against the Oklahoma City Thunder actually has more real value in the real standings. But we'll cover the All-Star Game. That's fine. I no longer work for NPR, and now I use the All-Star Game as a jumping off point, as a peg, as they say in the news business, to air old Felipe Lopez and new Bob Delaney interviews. The Gist is produced by producer Corey Wara and senior producer Joel Patterson, and we will talk to you not Monday, but Tuesday,
as we honor our presidents. Also, major announcement Tuesday. Did I mention that? Major announcement.
1 second, and Michael Jordan is angry at Bob Delaney.
Yeah, well, he thought he got hit. The ball was definitely way short on the release, but if it happened, it could possibly have happened in the lower body. Now, see, now he's really hot because he wanted to call.